You accepted our gift. The generous one nodded solemnly towards Alexandra, who was still holding the bone flute.
So, you must now accept our hospitality.
Hello. Once again, and welcome back to the Remedial Magic Podcast. My name's Brady, and as always, I'm joined by my brother Baylor and our good friend Delbert to talk about Alexandra Quick and the lands below. How's it going, guys?
Well, the game last night, Broncos game last night, I kind of feel like I've eaten a poison mushroom. Kind of has made me sick to my stomach, a little bit nauseous. So I'm doing okay. I'm managing, but, you know, not great.
I don't know what kind of poison mushroom you mean. The last one I had made me feel great.
You know, it was when a metaphor. When your supposed superstar GM signs a supposed superstar quarterback to a massive $250 million extension, and you hire a supposed offensive genius to be your head coach, you would expect maybe a little bit more than what we're getting out of the Broncos. I completely agree. They suck ass.
Yeah. On the Manning cast last week, Eli Manning said, while Pat McAfee was on there, of course, said, perhaps they should have given the $250 million to the punter.
Yeah, and obviously, we know that that's kind of a joke, but it doesn't feel like a joke, you know?
I don't know. I'm laughing.
So, I don't know. They're terrible. But to be honest, I think the last 2 weeks have really exposed a lot of the dark side of football sort of in general. And so, as a result of that, I'm just not surprised. It is what it is, you know. You trade like 20 bad years in professional sports for one amazing year. So it's kind of expected, I suppose.
It's the way the cookie crumbles, it seems.
I'll just continue bandwagging on good playoff teams every year since I don't really have a team I care about much anymore.
I do that for NBA basketball, and it's pretty good most of the time.
Well, it's like me with baseball, right? Like I'm certainly a Dodgers fan, but I don't pay attention to them until the playoffs, and typically they're there. So
yeah, they just won 111 games this year.
I didn't know that. I don't even know who's on their roster. I heard that Kershaw is still pitching for them, and that's about all I know. Cody Bellinger maybe.
Well, up until this year, I was a Rockies fan, and the Dodgers' starting nine, every single one of them would be the best player on the Rockies. So, you've got that going for you.
Woo,
I guess.
Nice.
But in more important things, has there been any Harry Potter news this week?
I have not heard any.
Not sure.
Quick Google
looking
search.
Looking at the headlines right now, there's not a lot. There's a headline that says Alan Rickman feared Harry Potter fans would target his apartment building. So that's riveting.
Yeah,
I don't know if you've maybe heard. This is like slightly Harry Potter news. That as of yesterday at 6:47 p.m., Little Shop of Horrors was about to begin in 15 minutes for Spooktacular 2022.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every night there's something from Spooktacular 2022 lighting up my phone, and boy, do I appreciate the effort.
I can't say I've joined any of them, but perhaps one of these days.
It's a good movie, though. Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, I agree.
Good movie.
And I'm glad that I get reminded about a different movie every single night. It's my favorite part of the day.
If only there was a way to shut off notifications.
So, with that being said, there doesn't appear to be a lot of Harry Potter news, nor does there appear to be a lot of energy coming from your host, Brady, in this episode. So, I think maybe we should just jump right into our main discussion. What do you guys think?
I'm in.
If I may first, because we haven't in a while, just wanted to shout out the fact that we have social medias and an email.
Ah, true. We do have social media.
The email is remedialmagicpodcast@gmail.com. Haven't received any emails in quite some time, and to be honest, I feel like Delbert's lonely because of it. So perhaps reach out to him.
It is literally his only job.
That's not true. I find the audiobook portion now.
Sometimes.
That's true.
Okay, that's fair.
When I remember. Instagram and Twitter is @the_RM podcast. We're also on Facebook. Search Remedial Magic Podcast. And we're on Reddit and, of course, the Discord. All these links are in the description of the podcast.
Yes, we are on Reddit, even though there's been radio silence for like 3 months.
It's tough saying that you're on Reddit because, like, we don't have a page or anything. We're just a user. So
yeah,
if you want to go see
better
endless
thing is
updates,
to follow. The better thing is to follow the Alexander Quick subreddit, but the reason for my lack of posting was not only lack of effort and laziness, but also because I think 11 of the last 12 posts in that sub were me saying, hey, come check out the podcast,
the new episode. Yeah.
With like 8 to 12 upvotes every time, and I just felt like we were getting a little bit spammy.
I will say,
so, you know,
that as far as that goes, I feel like we've captured as much of an audience as possible from that platform.
You're right. And like, there's some other, like, I tried to go to a specific subreddit to post your podcasts, and I tried to upload our podcast info, and they were like, oh, come back on Sharing Sunday. So I came back on Sharing Sunday, and I posted at like 10 p.m., and I wake up and it says your post has been removed because it has a link tree in it and we can't verify all the links. And then I just gave up entirely.
That's fair. And I have to be honest with you. The fact that our podcast isn't growing past about 40 listens per episode is not our fault at this point. It's the fault of everybody in the Discord who doesn't share our podcast with people they know.
That's toxic.
It's the truth.
I would argue that it's because we have such a niche topic.
Yeah, well, fine. Even if you want to take that perspective, it's sure. Also the fault of the people in the Discord because we have about 40 people listen to our podcast every week, and there's like 450 people in the Discord.
You know what? If we're going to throw blame, Inverarity, it's your fault. You post an update to your live journal 500 times a month, and not once have you just told everyone that we're here.
That's true, actually.
How dare
also,
you?
Also, I'd like to throw some blame at Sam Gabriel because surely he has a following. And, you know, I haven't heard anything on his stuff about us.
Oh, nice. Well,
basically, what we're saying is that our podcast isn't gaining any audience members. And God damn it, that's everybody's fault but ours.
Is Obama still around?
Yeah.
I want to say thanks, Obama.
So, you know what? I don't know what to say. I am looking at our numbers right now. And even with a 3-week hiatus, we still get like 40 listens a week.
I feel like we've hooked 40 sad, sorry people that really like our content. And now we're just dragging them along as we skip 3 weeks at a time. Hoping for more content.
Well, if they don't want to be strung along, they can leave any time.
True.
But if they're not going to leave, they could at least, you know, take 5 seconds to tell somebody else to listen to our podcast.
Yeah.
This is where our podcast turns heel.
If, no, hold on. Let me give one more chance. If we can get this episode or the season finale for season 2 episode to 150 listens, I'll just do a Harry Potter 1-8 movie watch along in the Discord nonstop, like 24 hours in a row.
I think you are setting the bar too low.
At 150?
Yeah.
What do you think I should go to?
I don't know. Your time is worth more than that, surely.
Well, I'll play RuneScape on the side. They'll never know.
Okay, sure. There you go. If we get this episode or our season finale, which is weird and very specific, to 150 listens, Delbert will watch all 8 Harry Potter movies every day for 8 days in a row.
No. That is not what was said or agreed upon. I believe I said 225 listens for 1 full day. Right?
I think I heard that he'd watch each movie on repeat in a given day. So Monday would be the Chamber of Secrets, you know, on repeat.
What?
Over and over
Monday
again.
Would be the Sorcerer's Stone.
Well, since this is the craziest segment ever, might as well start right in the middle.
Yeah, I'll watch them all day out of order.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Holy moly.
Decided by just rolling a D8.
Right.
An 8-sided dice, and if it comes up with the same one again, you have to watch that one again.
Oh, no.
Anywho, now that you know that we have social media and that it's your fault we don't have a bigger audience, listen in as we discuss chapters 30 and 31 of Alexander Quick and the Lands Below. Last week, we talked about chapters 28 and 29. 28 was titled Wizards in the New World, and 29 was titled By the Magic on Your Kind. And this week, it's chapters 30 and 31. 30 is called The Lands Below. It's as self-explanatory as it seems, because they do indeed go to the lands below. And then chapter 31 is called Bowie and the Lagaru. B-Y and the Lagaru. Bowie and the Lagaru. I have no idea
it's
how you say that.
It's gotta be B-Wee, right?
B-Wee and the Lagaru. Who knows?
We'll have to consult the audiobook.
I guess we can consult the audiobook. So, I think they're kind of weird because they're exciting chapters for sure, but I felt like these read way faster than a lot of the other chapters have so far.
I agree, 100%.
Now, I'm looking up the word, I don't know, it's spelled B-E-W-I, so who knows what that is? I guess Inverardi maybe could tune in and help us out a little bit with some information here. But B-E-W-I, I Googled that, and what I currently have is B-E-W-I.com, and I'm watching what I think is an industrial cold package commercial. So I don't think that Inverardi got his inspiration from this particular website.
I think that's a safe assumption, yes. Sounds like it.
So, I'm lost for words. I have no idea how to pronounce the word. But at any rate, Baylor, how'd you feel about getting to the lands below for the first time?
I was excited. I was kind of surprised because I figured it seems like a much bigger place than I guess I thought it would be. It feels like they've been walking. Well, they walk for days in these two chapters and don't really get anything other than almost death. So, I don't know. It's exciting. I'm glad that we're finally there after hearing about it for 29 chapters. So, yeah.
I think it reads like a really cool and fun Dungeons & Dragons adventure. Kind of like the start of a really cool Dungeons and Dragons adventure.
I think it's interesting that the edge of the world is a solid rock cliff that just goes from the ground into infinity. And then there happens to be a hole in it with a massive bloodthirsty cat that likes water.
Yeah, I found the water. What are they? Water panthers?
Underwater panthers.
Underwater panthers. I found those to be, the first time I read this, I found those to be really interesting because you're right. There's like a big wall that seems to be separating the panthers from the rest of the lands below. And so what does that mean for their role in this place? Are they specifically here to guard the entrance to the lands below for some reason?
Yeah, I feel like they have to be placed there just with how that's like where you fall into when you enter. Like, I feel like it's almost like a protection measure. I don't know. That's like your first trial to get in, is to survive those things.
The really cool thing about these panthers is that this is not a creature that Inverardi just made up. We already know that there's a lot of connection between the lands below and Native Americans in the lands above, I guess. I don't really know what you would call the normal realm where Alex spends most of her time. But these underwater panthers are creatures of Native American lore. It's established, and it's further established by the fact that Alex is surprised to find that underwater panthers are actually bronze in color and have horns. That's what Max tells her. She thinks it's just an old, like a folk tale, essentially. And that's exactly what I'm looking at here in this picture of an underwater panther when I Googled underwater panthers in Native American mythology. And so I just think that it's really neat that Inverardi went out of their way to establish this connection between Native Americans and the lands below, and then used actual creatures from Native American mythology to kind of populate the lands below as a place.
It makes sense, too, that the creatures that are from Native American mythology would be considered magical creatures in this universe. So I think it is a really cool gesture.
So according to GreatLakes.guide, the underwater panther's Native American name is the Mishi Peshu, which is a creature affiliated with the Ojibwe tribe, the Algonquin tribe, the Ottawa tribe, the Shawnee tribe, and the Cree tribe. So I just like the fact that this is something that's been taken from actual lore. And on top of that, in this chapter, in chapter 30, we see that these things kind of move through and inhabit not only this lake, but also kind of some tunnels that are going through the cliff wall. And again, I'm reading here that these creatures, these Mishi Peshu, these underwater panthers, live and travel through underwater tunnels as well. So I take my hat off to Inverardi here in incorporating such a specific and thorough version of these underwater panthers from Native American mythology.
I also like, too, and this is a throwback to a few chapters back, but at one point Alex is in the library reading a book on Indian cultures and magic and stuff like that, and it says there were tales of Wendigos, Sasquatches, Thunderbirds, Piasas, Oaklicklies, Horned Serpents, Underwater Panthers, and Great Skunk Apes, among other fantastic beasts. So it's cool that we had heard this, maybe just as a throwaway line, like chapters earlier, and then it comes back, oh look, here they are.
It's a nice little setup for what we're expecting moving forward, and it points to something I think that's cool, is that these children's books Alex has been reading about the lands below have like a distinct level of truth behind them. They're not just kids' books.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a deep cut. But if you go back to, I think, our very first episode of the podcast, we talk about this book that Alex finds in the Muggle world that talks about magical creatures, and we were sitting there debating whether or not this is like fairy tales, or is this a magical book on creatures that made its way into the Muggle world, and what's the accuracies or inaccuracies there.
It's an interesting throwback.
Yeah, because it was like about the red caps and the
Kappa. And
thank you.
Pinky punks and
yeah,
all kinds of stuff. But it's pretty cool. And the interaction that Alex and Max have with these creatures is also pretty interesting. they are guardians, at least of this lake that Alex and Max fall into when they enter the lands below. And it ups the danger factor, like heightens the tension quite a bit that they immediately get thrown into a life-threatening situation.
Especially when it doesn't seem like it's life-threatening right off the bat. I kind of enjoyed that part of it.
Something I don't guess I fully understand is, like, Max doesn't fully welcome Alex to the lands below until they get away from the underwater panthers by going through this long tunnel and flying their brooms through it, and then they come out past this massive rock wall into a space that appears to be just a vast, empty, bearing nothingness for as far as they can see in any direction. And so, do we even necessarily consider the underwater panthers lair as part of the lands below, or is it more of like a transition point?
That's an interesting question. I didn't even think about that when I was reading it. I mean, I would say as soon as they go through the floor in the downstairs of Charmbridge, I would think that they would be in the lands below. So I would say it's probably part of the lands below.
I have a theory about this that I had at the time when I first read this, but I wasn't sure if it was feasible or not. But it had talked earlier in this book about how if there was any lands below in Europe, like Hades or River Styx or anything like that, it was probably sealed up by wizards long ago. To me, that made me think that these underwater panthers were put here by wizards. Because for some reason they couldn't seal the gate, or maybe this is what they consider to have sealed the gate, in just putting a dangerous creature that will kill you right below the entrance.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're saying has some logic to it.
Well, it's also like, on top of that, it's not just any creature, it's a creature that spells don't work on.
True, that is true, actually.
And also, I believe they don't see it, or maybe they do in the distance as they're flying away. But the Big Mama wasn't even there. If she was, they're dead.
Right, and they're just so isolated from what's appears to be the rest of the lands below. So
yeah, so I think this is more of like something that was either a deterrent or intentionally formed there by wizards to stop people from traversing.
I think that's fair to say. Sense. Yeah. Now, do you guys think that, because after they travel for a little bit, Max tells Alex that they can't fly. They have to walk because it would be considered impolite to fly. This is obviously something Abraham has told him, right? But how does Abraham know that flying would be considered impolite in this place?
He's got to have been here, right? That's my thought.
I kind of took it like he assumed that. I don't know if he knew it, I guess. And the reason I'm saying that is because typically, like for me, when I go to a new place, meet new people, I try to be as polite as I can to make that good first impression.
Right. And you don't fly your broom when you're meeting new people.
Yeah, I typically drive. But, you know, like maybe these creatures don't understand the wizards or whatever, so they think if they're flying the brooms, they would perceive them as an enemy. I also kind of think it's actually good writing by Inverardi, because like when the colonials came over from Europe into America in you know, real life, they were very polite, you know, and generous. And I'm sure that they kind of hid their technology from the Native Americans in order to not be perceived as a threat, but also, you know, to kind of have the upper hand, I guess. And so I feel like this is very an homage to that. Like, we're coming into your land, we're being very polite, even though probably are going to find some way to use you as typical. wizards do.
Yeah, again, it's one of those things where we don't really know the answer for sure. It's just a curious concept, because obviously they could do a lot more if they were flying. They could certainly get places a lot quicker if they were flying versus walking. And we see that later on, because they send Charlie out to go scout for them because he can fly, meaning he can get quite a bit more done.
Yeah, Charlie's a cool dude.
I also wanted to ask, where are we? Are we just underground? Or are we in a different dimension?
I don't think there's any way that they're just underground.
Right.
Like, this is like a different realm.
This isn't like a journey to the center of the earth kind of thing?
I don't think so. I don't think so, because if it's just underground, then surely other people can get there other ways.
Well, I mean, like, deep underground. Like...
Yeah, but we're talking about wizards, right? So, like,
yeah. Fair.
Like, if they're just underground, then if Abraham's been here before, why can't he just apparate and arrive there? You know? Also, if we're deep underground on Earth, not in a different plane, then why did Inverarity roll up a random encounter table that includes depressed corn? As he did in this chapter.
Excuse me? I don't know.
Because that's, like, the encounter we sort of get here at the beginning of this, or in the middle of this chapter, is they come across, and I'm not kidding you, depressed corn.
Yeah, that's kind of hilarious to me.
Like, depressed naked lady corn, in fact.
Yeah. When they show the light of, I guess, the stronger Lumos spell, and it's a stronger light, they, like, turn into naked woman corn. And they can sing and talk. It's very, very interesting.
And then after all of this, they see that these corns are sentient and maybe more human than they should be, and Max is like, alright, we gotta move on. See you later.
Well, I would move on too.
Same, but
like,
damn, that's savage.
And the thing is I also looked for information about this in Native American mythology, and I can't find anything that speaks specifically of corn that grows depressed when it can't see the sun. Right, and at least I think that's what's going on here, because the corn keeps asking for them to tell their father, like for Alex and Max to tell the corn's father that they're down there. And I think that means the sun.
That's what Alex thinks.
I don't know what else it would mean necessarily.
Yeah, so that sounds right.
Like, what is this supposed to mean anything, or is this just supposed to be an introduction to how weird things are down in the lands below?
I don't know. I have no idea. It's bizarre.
I don't know either. It's weird.
We do get information from them, though. After they're warmed up by the light or whatever happened.
That's true, actually. We sort of, first they get warmed up by the light and they begin to make bold exclamations like their father can crack the ground and split the sky and he can send wind and rain and things like that. But we also find out that while Alex and Max are looking for the little people down here, that there's not little people, but there are two-legged people and four-legged people, as well as screaming water people and smoking rock people, as well as the generous ones. This group of beings, I guess that's all we really know, called the generous ones. And that Alex kind of hits on that, like, oh yeah, that sounds about right.
That's the one.
Yeah. How do we find them? And the corn maiden girl that Alex is talking to tells her to send her raven looking for the generous ones. How does this corn even know?
It's Why probably been there a while.
The smartest corn of all time.
You know, I kind of wonder if this has something to do... I didn't even think about it because I didn't think this at the time, but if Abraham Thorne's been down there, maybe they saw him send his raven to find them.
Abraham Thorne rhymes with corn.
Yep.
There it is. I'm trying real hard to Google already. Search right now.
Oh, Abraham Thorne gave born to the corn. He's their daddy.
No, he's not their daddy.
Listen, I don't know either, so.
This says, Corn Mother, also called Corn Maiden, is a mythological figure believed among indigenous agricultural tribes in North America to be responsible for the origin of corn.
There you go.
But that doesn't...
These are the original corn.
This is the first corn.
Yeah, they found it.
I really think it's corn because of the ties with Native Americans.
Well, it absolutely is. And there are corn maidens in Native American mythology. There's like the yellow corn maiden, the blue corn maiden, the red corn maiden, and the white corn maiden. But they specifically represent like directions. Cardinal directions.
These corn just kind of gave direction, if you think about it.
They did.
Yeah.
They did.
It's genius.
I don't know.
I'm sold.
Yeah. That can be a podcast explanation for now. What an episode everybody's getting today. First, we tell them how they're not doing enough for us, and then they listen to us stammer through a bunch of Native American mythological legends that we don't have any knowledge about. Pretty exciting stuff.
We should get Jarell as a co-host of the podcast for an episode.
Now, the corn does say to Alex, if you send your bird, if you send the raven, it will bring you back a gift if it returns. And that really causes some concern for Alex. She doesn't like the if it returns part.
Yeah, it's a little ominous for sure.
Yeah, to be expected, I think, with a familiar. That she's scared, yeah.
But why would the generous ones give a gift to the raven? Like, what's the symbolism that we're not picking up here with Charlie being a raven and going and seeking this gift?
My theory is, once again, as Baylor just stated, that Abraham Thorne has been through here with Hagar before. And that it may have worked for him.
I think like that, or, you know, Charlie has been finding things throughout the entire book, and maybe that entire thing has just been leading up to this. Like, this is the ultimate quest for him to find something. I don't know.
It's definitely a possibility. Now, at this point in the story, Baylor, were you concerned that Charlie might not come back?
No. I don't know. I feel like he's kind of a mainstay of the series. I would have been very sad if we would have got Hedwigged again. You know, but no, I wouldn't say I was concerned.
It's kind of tough because if Charlie doesn't come back, I don't know if Alex and Max are ever going to get where they're trying to go. It's not like Max knows where they're needing to go. He's just leading Alex in a random direction across this, I don't even know what to call it, this like massive field of rocks and pebbles.
Yeah.
You know? Later on, though, we kind of get into the next chapter. Bui and the Lagaru.
Bui
and the Lagaru. However we want to say it, we kind of get into that chapter, and it's time for Alex and Max to spend their first night down in the lands below. And I want to talk for just a second about magical MREs.
Oh, yeah. They're cool.
They seem cool, right? They apparently are in a can roughly the size of a tuna can. And they, of course, being magical, pull out full meals, essentially. Jerky, dried vegetables, cookies. And then once you pull all that out of there, you turn the can over into a bowl and something else comes out. In Max's case, some sort of corn mush comes out. And in Alex's case, it's a lump of mashed potatoes. And so I have to say, they sound pretty cool. They sound maybe a little bit better than MREs that we get for backpacking. I was
going to say, definitely better than MREs, right? Like, this has got to taste okay compared to that.
Well, not only does it probably taste good, but it's warm, you know, like right out of the can. It's already hot.
I will make note that Alex's food, specifically her chicken, is a little desiccated in appearance.
I mean, stuff might get old.
Yeah, but why would you eat desiccated chicken?
I don't know. Hungry?
Okay, fair enough.
It's that or the corn children. Oh, that's what it was. I thought about this halfway through the day. I was going to say, huh, it's like Children of the Corn, but worse when it came to those corn mittens.
Sure.
Yeah.
Maybe it's better because when they start complaining, you can just walk away.
True. Or like turn out the light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they stay the night. And of course, Max has one of those cool tents like Arthur Weasley where you go inside and it's way bigger on the inside than the outside. And when I read the Harry Potter series for the first time, that's one of the things that I thought was the most cool.
Yeah, I like too, because I think Harry says something like magic is so awesome or so cool or something when he walks in and sees that. And you get a similar reaction to Alex here where she walks in, she's like, awesome.
It is. Just a cool thing. It is a really cool thing. Imagine that if you didn't expect that to be the case and then you just walk in and you've got, instead of a tent, you've got like a 3-bedroom apartment.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Also, question, not pertaining to Alex Quick, pertaining to Harry Potter. Why did the Weasleys not just pitch that tent in their yard? Like 24/7, and give them nearly double the space of their house?
Well, because the whole point of the Weasleys as a metaphor is to show that you don't need nice things or space or whatever to still be a happy, functioning family. That's why they're written the way they're written, is to show that you don't need nice things in order to still, like, love your family and be a good person.
Right, and then they win the lottery and we all hate Percy.
Well, yeah, but I don't think the lack of money is what drove Percy away.
Oh, true. But I don't know. If they had the tent anyways, why aren't they using it?
Well, I'm pretty sure Arthur borrowed it.
Oh, did he?
Pretty sure he borrowed it from the guy who works with him in the Muggle whatever office.
Gotcha. That could be. I might have just missed that.
Old Fillmore Artigan or whatever that guy's name is.
Nice.
That he works with. I can't remember right now. Boy. I'm having a hard time staying on track this time around. I apologize. Once they wake up the next day, Max demands that Alex take a bath, which I thought was strange, if I'm being honest. Not strange for anything weird. I just thought it was strange.
It's definitely not customary for us. Like, we're used to camping for a weekend and we go in and don't even worry about hygiene, really. Because you don't get that dirty when it's a couple days unless you're in the dirt or in the mud or whatever. So, yeah, it definitely seems out of place for us. For sure. I'm wondering if Amber Hardy is just... I don't know what his background is at all, obviously. But maybe he's not used to that, you know, when he camps.
Maybe.
If he camps.
More importantly, though, after they take their bath and kind of start to get ready for the day, the world's creepiest eventual child predator arrives on scene. And that is
yes.
Bee-wee, or B-Y, or B-U-Y,
Bee-wee.
Or whoever. At first, when she arrives, she just kind of stands there and stares at Max and Alex, and then when they point their wands at her, she takes off and runs away. And Alex says, that was creepy. And you know what? It was.
True.
A little creepy.
True.
It was a little sus, yeah.
I mean, same could be said for us, right? Like, what if we walked outside and aliens had crash-landed out in the parking lot and they were just, like, taking a bath in the sprinkler?
We'd probably look. I hadn't considered this from the creepy woman's perspective.
We'd be watching. Like,
yeah?
Yeah.
I suppose we would be.
We'd probably also hide if they pointed something at us.
Would
like,
we
run
be,
away and hide.
Would we be watching on cloven hoof, though?
Find out next week.
Find out right now, to be honest. But the lady disappears for a while, and then they eventually make camp again, and Alex goes to sleep, and when she wakes up, Max is now talking to this strange woman. And she seems to have an effect on Max similar to like Fleur Delacour has on...
Yeah, the Vila.
Right.
Yeah.
Has on men, and that Max appears to be pretty entranced by what she has to say. Right? So much so that he sends Alex away even though he's been telling her not to leave his side at all the whole time they've been down here. And he does it because this strange woman suggests that he should. So I found that to be pretty interesting.
Yeah. It was interesting to see. And then also, like, later after the whole fun stuff happens, which I'm sure we'll talk about, you know, he kind of claims that he didn't do that entrancedly. I don't really know what a word is.
He does say that he was just pretending, but man, it doesn't feel like he was.
No, it sounds like he's almost like trying to be defensive and sound stronger than he is when he explains it. He's like, oh yeah, it was because I knew you would do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, again, this is another creature that exists in Native American mythology.
Fantastic.
I can't find an actual name. The Wikipedia entry is called Deer Woman. And to give some more context, we find out later on that this woman's, the lower half of her body is like the hind legs of a deer. But sometimes known as the Deer Lady. So if you're trying to be proper about it.
Also a good starting to a letter.
Yeah, Deer Lady, exactly.
Deer Lady.
It's a spirit in Native American mythology whose associations and qualities vary depending on the situation and relationship. So if you're respectful of women and children, she's associated with fertility and love. But if you have harmed women and children, she's vengeful and murderous. And she's known to lure men to their death.
Wow.
Does this mean that Max has been murderous towards children?
Yeah, has he been abusive of women?
Does a deer woman lure them to their death regardless of whether they've been nice to women or rude to women?
According to this, which it's Wikipedia, so I'm not claiming to be an expert, but to those who have harmed women and children, she is vengeful and murderous and known to lure them to their death.
Damn, Max has a dark side.
Well, maybe it feels like she was trying to lure him away.
Little bit, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe she was just being overly nice. And hated Alex because Alex abused her muggle friends. Or not friends, but bullies.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's tough to say. It does say that deer women show characteristics and traits of sirens. So her allure over Max makes sense
right. When
you consider that. I don't know. Very interesting. Especially very interesting because she convinces Max to send Alex away, which is not good because we don't know how dangerous this place is. And then at one point, it seems that she's trying to seduce Max, or she has seduced Max or something. Where's the part?
It's awkward a little bit.
It's suspect.
It's a problem for a couple of reasons, right? I'm trying to find the part where it talks about this. Yeah. It took a split second for Alexander to register what she was seeing because it was so wrong. Biwi's legs were the hairy hindquarters of a deer. Alexander didn't even have time to shout another warning before one of those powerful hooves kicked out and caught Maximilian in the chest. He grunted and went flying. And this happened just shortly after this creature was screaming in frustration and anger, and Maximilian pushes her away while she was lifting her skirt. So I just don't know what the hell was going on.
I'm going to stick with it being pretty suspect.
It's very suspect, but that doesn't sound like she's luring Max to his death anymore.
No.
You know?
Yeah, seems like she's being pretty loving.
It does.
Death
it
by can... deer aids?
Incredibly loving. And more to the fact that while this is going on, while Max is getting intimate with the deer woman, Alex is being attacked by killer rabbits that are wielding, that have sharp teeth, and if that's not enough, are also wielding bows and blow dart guns. To be honest, the lands below at this point just reads like it is the weirdest fever dream of all time.
Yeah. I think I did have a dream in the lands below when I was like 13 or 14, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not going
to
ask you about what part. So.
Just the rabbit part. I feel like I had a dream where I was chased by murderous rabbits at some point.
You weren't.
Maybe it was after Baylor
deer,
committed
huh?
a PETA atrocity at a baseball game.
That could have happened. Maybe those deer that used to run through our hometown, you were just paying a lot of attention to them one day.
Ooh, not like that I wasn't. That's for sure. I do not want to see what's below a deer's skirt, I gotta tell you.
But all of a sudden pandemonium happens because there's these deadly weapon-wielding rabbits coming out, and we find out that those are the Lagaru that are mentioned in the chapter title. And then also, Alex casts Talent Allegra on the deer woman, causing her to, like, jump and twitch all over the place. And then she has to somehow get Max out of this place because he's understandably a little shooken by the fact that he's been kicked full force in the chest by a deer.
Excellent choice of spell by Alex, I'd like to say.
The Talent Allegra?
Yeah, messing
I like that
with
one.
The deer's legs.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny.
It is. The image is pretty funny, I think.
Yeah, I'm a big fan.
Yeah, because there was that spell, and then she also cast, like, poison gas or something? Or maybe that was the dung bombs that she released?
It might have been the dung bombs. I don't know. This chapter was so
it's a
crazy,
crazy escape. Like
yeah.
They see all the killer rabbits. The deer goes aggressive, and they like throw dung bombs, throw snakes, throw spells and shield spells, and hop on a broom and fly away. It's crazy.
It's a bizarre scene. Truly a bizarre scene.
Yeah, a fever dream is definitely a good way to explain it.
Now, I have to ask you guys, because I was thinking about this. Shortly after this encounter, well, first of all, we get an amazing one-liner from Max, where Alex asks him if he learned anything, because he was entranced by this Lagaru, or not Lagaru, this Biwi person, and he says, yeah, I'll never eat venison again.
Yeah.
Amazing.
What a comment.
What an incredible comment. What a double entendre, given the situation that just played out.
Yeah.
You know? But secondly, Charlie comes back. And Charlie just happens to give Alex a gift that takes them exactly where they need to go.
Yeah, this is some D&D, I need you to get to this place kind of planning right here.
A little bit. I was going to ask you guys how this felt to you. Did it feel as though it came about naturally, or did it feel as though Alex and Max were just going to wander forever unless Inverardi wrote in like a little Deus Ex Machina here.
I was kind of appreciative of the appearance of Charlie because I knew that that would mean the story's progressing.
I think so. I agree both ways. I enjoyed it. Yeah, like this place is already weird enough that I don't question it, even though it is exactly what you're saying with, what is it, Deus Ex Machina?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, excellent immediate save, we think, but also just, it's fine. Like, we get away from stuff beforehand anyways, so it doesn't, like, save them from death. It just saves them from what you said, like, wandering for days, weeks, months, however long.
It's true. The other thing that this part drives home even more is that Alex, without Alex, Max would never get wherever he needs to go down here. He doesn't have a Raven familiar to go get this gift from the generous ones. If Alex wasn't there an hour ago when he was being seduced by a deer woman, Max would definitely be dead.
Or be sleeping with a deer woman.
Or, yeah.
Yeah.
Raising little half-deer children.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Be like that thing from... Chronicles of Narnia.
Oh, the satyr?
Is that what it's called? Mr. Tumnus.
Yeah, the satyr.
Yeah, that one.
Wouldn't they technically be quarter deer children?
True.
Well, Max has never lifted his skirt, so we don't know.
Oh. maybe it lifted the skirt and it wasn't a lady deer.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Moving on. But regardless, without Alex's presence in this chapter, Max is not going to complete whatever his mission is, right? So I think Max needs to just take a step back and let Alex be the main character of the story again.
Yeah. I thought that, you know, the last couple chapters, the lead up to him being like, oh, you're actually not going into the lands below with me, was a little sus. And then we get to the lands below and it turns out Alex is very important to him because...
Yeah.
Probably without Alex, he doesn't get his bag back either without getting hurt. So, out of the water from the underwater panthers. So, she's definitely played a big part in the last two chapters.
Now, before we talk about the end of the chapter, I'm going to jump back just a little bit because you reminded me of something that Max says, Baylor. Alex, when Max says that we can't fly our brooms... we have to walk. Alex says, then why did we bring the brooms? And he says it was to escape from the underwater panthers. Was he just saying that, like, pretending like he knew?
I feel like it was a joke almost. Like, that's what we used them for. But I think he brought them, like, in case of emergency.
That makes sense. Yeah. Okay. Because if it's the other way around, then he's more useless than he appears.
Right.
Yeah,
well, I think if he knew they were there, then he really did a disservice in not telling Alex.
They should have been on the brooms when the portal opened, yes. If that's the case.
Yes.
I think that's the case, too, because Alex says she had learned to recognize his dry sense of humor. So.
Okay.
I feel that makes sense. It was just a joke, probably.
I think it's been a while since we had this discussion as well. Why are wizarding schools just the least safe places in the world?
You know,
well, if they were safe, there wouldn't be any cool stories, you know?
You're right, but maybe that would be better for the kids.
I agree 100%.
I also think potentially they don't care about safety, you know? Like, we've talked about in the past, like, they kind of overlook safety because they think...
We have, yeah.
That's true. Maybe the ultimate wizarding rule is just the Darwin Award. Like,
well, they have, like, instant fixes for pretty much anything.
True, but if it can't be fixed, they're just like, yeah, whatever.
Like, even in this chapter, after Max gets kicked by the deer woman, they're worried that his sternum is cracked. And so to fix that, he just takes a nasty-tasting potion that's going to take care of it over the next couple hours. If you thought in real life that your sternum was cracked, you'd be in the hospital. You know?
Yeah, that would hurt.
So, like, you would have... The fact that they have instantaneous help kind of lends to the fact that they don't really care about safety as much as we do.
Right.
back to the end of the chapter here. Charlie brings Alex a gift from the generous ones, and it turns out to be a bone flute, which is cool. I mean, it's on theme, in my opinion.
What kind of bone?
We don't know. You know? But additionally, when Alex plays this flute, it just takes them to the generous ones. You know? It just takes them there. And there it is. Mission success is right in front of Max's face. All of a sudden. The generous ones seem interesting. The description of them is that they are small, half-naked, with wrinkled skin like brown paper and large bulbous eyes. Now, what does that sound like to you?
A house elf.
Oh.
Very much. It sounds like house elves, right? Their chests and arms are bare. A few had some animal skins or necklaces. And they wear strips of fur and leather as loincloths. These sound like house elves.
Yeah.
Absolutely, they do. The other thing is that some of them are carrying carved wooden sticks that Alex thinks might be wands, but they don't really look like a normal wand. So I find that to be interesting, too, because while they look like house elves, we know house elves are not allowed to use wands.
Not in the wizarding world.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking that, too. It's got to be part of that pact that was made with the Confederation or just humans in general. That they wouldn't use wands in the real world. Or these stick things, whatever they are.
The other thing that I think is pretty interesting here is that... It's not interesting, sorry. I'm saying this wrong. The other thing, when I imagine this, it's interesting. You guys probably don't imagine it the same way, but when... After Max and Alex introduce themselves, one of the generous ones, steps forward and says... I am Tiao. We are the generous ones. But I just like to imagine that when he says we are the generous ones, all of them say it at the same time.
Ooh.
I just think it makes it more creepy, which I think is fun.
I like to think all of them in the crowd behind him are going, nya, 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 nya.
Oh my gosh. Why would they be doing that?
I don't know, but I would love to see it. If I direct the movie, that's happening.
Wow, that's incredible. So, sure, they're either all saying we are the generous ones or they're gnashing their teeth menacingly. But Tiao does say something that seems maybe more ominous than just like the face value of it. And that's how, after Tiao introduces himself and all the generous ones are gnashing their teeth at Alex and Max, he says, eyes gleaming, you accepted our gift, so you must also accept our hospitality. And it's weird that it's not phrased as a choice.
Yeah.
I agree, but for a different reason. I think it's ominous and a little scary just because it's the last line of the chapter.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, like...
It's good tension building, for sure.
I kind of also think that, you know, if the generous ones are the... Not descendants, but ancestors of house elves, or, you know, what a house elf is, but in the lands below. If they still talk the same, like, you know, third person, that kind of thing. Like, I feel like a house elf would say, you know, you must also accept our hospitality, because they're like, they don't have the proper, like, grammar to say it in a question form. It's almost like it's a statement, but it's also a question, if that makes sense. I don't know.
Yeah, it does, actually.
I just can't wait until next week when Baylor finds out that this is the afterlife for house elves and we run into Dobby.
It's true.
Wow.
We'll have to check in on his journal entries from like 6 months ago and see if it's how it turned out.
But that's where the chapter ends, is with the generous ones telling Max and Alex that since they accepted the gift, they must also accept the hospitality. Again, these chapters had a lot, but they also read so fast, it felt like, compared to other ones.
Yeah, it was a lot of chaos, right? Like, it's going to go quick.
I'm telling you, these chapters felt like a D&D adventure.
True. Yeah. I mean, it could be, I think, and you know what? I'm certain, in fact, that you had talked about hosting a Lands Below D&D campaign before.
I think I did, yeah.
Yeah.
I do also think that these two chapters, I think, were the shorter, on the shorter end, compared to the other arcs that we've done. So
they certainly were.
But yeah, no, I agree. I was not necessarily on the edge of my seat, but I felt excited to continue reading the chapters. So yeah, they went by very quick for me as well.
I agree. And now it's time for us to do the ARC MVP. Delbert, you're going to start this time.
Man, I would leave it to you guys because I like to go with the harder options, but there's no question of it being Alex Quick this time.
That's fine. I wasn't going to pick her.
We already spoke about it. Like, without her, Max would be just lost or banged by a deer or eaten by rabbits. So,
I'd also argue that without her, this book doesn't exist. So, good job.
Probably true.
It's the trump card every time.
True.
My ARC MVP this time around is the depressed corn.
Wow. I cannot believe that's your choice.
They're the ones who said give a gift or send your bird to the generous ones to so it can receive a gift.
You're right. I think Baylor's gonna take the one I thought you were gonna take.
The depressed corn, MVP all the way. Without them, who knows what Max and Alex are doing now.
Right.
To be honest, I would be surprised if I have the one that you were thinking, Delbert, because I'm going to go out on a very long limb, an unproven limb, and choose my ARC MVP of Abraham Thorne, because I think he's been to the Lands Below, and he's the one who told the depressed corn, or maybe didn't tell him, but they saw him, send his raven, get this gift, meet with the generous ones. So honestly,
I'm changing
Abraham
my
Thorne,
MVP.
You are the GOAT of the Lands
Below. Now that is a crackpot theory.
I want to change my MVP now. None of you giving love to Charlie.
Listen, it doesn't matter. That's not allowed.
Dude, she literally said, hey, in this place you've never been before that isn't Earth, that probably doesn't work with the same magnetic field or whatever that birds can interpret, go find these guys and bring us a gift. And he brings a teleporting flute back to them in one day.
Listen, you know the rules of the game.
I can't believe Charlie wasn't on anyone's list.
So anyways, Brady, what was your ARC title?
That's an interesting question. I was going to call it Forced Hospitality.
Not bad.
All right,
alternatively,
nice.
I was going to call it Corn. It's a Beautiful Thing.
Pretty bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
Corn, It's a Beautiful Thing. Wow.
So those are my two options. Delbert, what was yours?
Deer and rabbits and panthers, oh my.
Okay, that's all right, yeah. I thought about doing something like of deer and men.
Okay.
But I've already done that before.
Right, of mice and men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was yours, Baylor?
Man, I'm trying to save the segment. I honestly...
Save the segment? I thought mine was okay.
Delbert's was good.
Nah, I was just joking.
What
Forced Hospitality was average.
I thought it was okay. For you, specifically, yes.
So my ARC title is Mission Possible, because why not, you know?
Nice.
It does seem more possible now.
I mean, if you change the hair color, it's basically like Ron Stoppable and Kim Possible down here.
Yeah, basically. Something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. So good. Baylor, would you please remind us of what your prediction was last week so that we can wrap this up?
Oh, boy. I believe, obviously, they will end up in the Lands Below because they fell through the floor. And they will run into the fight scene. Who they'll be fighting? I think it'll be Confederation wizards that are down there. Because I think, because there's this deal, with these creatures, the generous ones, that the Confederation having been tipped off that, oh, people are going into lands below, you know, for the Mors Mortis Society, they will be down there ready to protect these people. So that's what I think will be in the fight. Regarding the BY and the Lagaru, honestly, I think that that is the people, or the leader, I guess, of the people, of the generous ones. And so, speaking with BY after defending themselves against these Confederation wizards, there will be discussions about Abraham Thorne, what must be done, what must be offered, and what will be received. What will be offered is protection in the overworld and reuniting with the Native Americans. And then what will be received is obviously Abraham Thorne's power over the Confederation because he has this massive weapon of theirs.
Well,
zero.
It was a tough week.
Zero.
It was a very tough week. Much like the remainder of this episode.
Oh, it's rough.
It's been, yeah. They did go to the lands below.
We knew that already.
Yeah.
That was the last sentence of the previous episode.
Yeah. Well, on a 1 to 10 scale, 0 doesn't exist, so I'm going to give it a 1.
Yeah, okay, I'll join you there.
So
1's across the board. Excellent.
This was a tough one.
Get ratioed.
It would have been nearly impossible to have a good prediction here, I think.
Yeah.
I would like to throw out blame.
You know what? No, I'm going to give it a 2.
Ew.
Oh, wow.
Because the last line of the previous chapter does not say anything about the lands below. It says they fell into darkness.
Yeah, which is because they gave the obol to the elf, which does what again?
As far as we know, takes him to the land below.
Oh.
But it doesn't mean that it's for sure. M's a tricksy little elf. We don't know what she's going to do. I'm going with a 2.
1.
You know, I'm gonna take the 2. I will say, just laying out some blame. Inverarity, you didn't give me anything with the chapter titles. Do better next time. Brady and Delbert, give me better answers, man. I don't know what else to say. You know,
All right, here, I'll just tell you how the book ends.
All right, ask us your question so you can make your next prediction.
So the next two chapters are called what? So I can make those questions.
Chapter 32 is called The Generous Ones, and chapter 33 is called The Most Terrible Gift.
Okay, first question. Brady. Does the chapter title for chapter 33, The Most Terrible Gift, reference the bone flute? Like, have something to do with the bone flute?
Yes, it certainly does.
Okay. And Delbert, are the generous ones turn out to be allies? Do the generous ones turn out to be allies?
Depends on who you are.
For Alex and Max and the Thorn Circle.
Once again, depends on who you are. If you ask about one specific person, I could give you an answer.
I mean, I asked about the organization. Okay.
That's more than one person.
How about for Abraham Thorne?
Yeah.
I hate you. Okay.
What do you mean?
All right. Make your prediction.
I feel like that was fair. Brady?
I feel like we're going to get kicked out of the recording studio in about 5 minutes.
True.
So my prediction. First of all, they have met up with the generous ones. That was already known. Alex and Max will have a long discussion with them, finding out all of the Confederation secrets, except all of the secrets. So they won't find out really much. But they'll determine.
What?
They will determine what the Confederation offered the lands below in order to, you know, seal up these entrances from the Native Americans. And they will figure out what Abraham Thorne must do in order to gain their favor. Now, the most terrible curse regarding this bone flute. Since they've accepted it, there's an unfortunate penance to pay. And that penance is Max's life.
Okay, well, you really threw me for a loop with the whole
Yeah, I want clarification.
They find out everything and also nothing at the same time.
Do they find out the secrets or do they not find out the secrets? For
they
the
don't
record.
Find out the secrets of the Confederation, but they find out what they were after, which is what the Confederation offered them and also what Thorne must do in order to gain their favor, which is why
they
went
find
to
the contract offer. They just don't find out why they offered it.
Yeah, probably.
All right.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, with that being said, one of our best episodes of all time,
ooh,
for sure. Definitely our most structured and least unhinged. So we're going to wrap it up there.
And remember, the more emails you send and the more people you share this podcast to, the better we'll try to do.
Yeah. Do your part to make our lives a little bit better, if you would.
Oh, especially you, Sam.
I love everyone who listens to our podcast. Thank you for being you.
Don't forget about the Halloween Spooktacular happening every night for the rest of October.
In the Discord.
I've been Brady.
Happy Halloween.
Okay, we'll see you next week. Goodbye.